I don't suppose there is a person listening to me who would know of Henry Carr, C-A-R-R. He died in America last Friday at the age of 73 after battling with cancer. He was a superstar athlete. In 1964, at the Olympic Games in Tokyo, he won the gold medal for the 200-metre sprint. He was a member of the American gold medal-winning 4x400-metre relay team. He then became a defensive back for the New York Giants. But after he soared in the Olympics, he went back to Detroit, couldn't find a job, and hit rock bottom. He got messed up with cocaine. He climbed from the depths and cleaned up his life, rejoined his family, and transformed as a Jehovah's Witness. He travelled to rural Georgia to witness his faith, and he found peace and success in a different way. But if we are to focus on his athletic achievements and be dazzled by the two gold medals, a couple of things need to be understood. He rarely talked about them. He openly questioned what he called the whole circus around big-time athletics, the hero worship, the tendency to put athletes on a pedestal. And he said to him the awards and achievements were fleeting and empty. He'd been in track and field meets all around the world. He said there was no substance to them. He said it was all vanity. He was raised in Detroit, the ninth of 11 children. He was enshrined in the USA Track and Field Hall of Fame in 1997. He ran in the Olympics in 1964, hoping it would give him money and a stable job. His victory never paid off. He took to drugs, marijuana at first, and then he hit rock bottom. And as I said, his life was turned around when he became with his wife a Jehovah's Witness. He had 3 children and 5 grandchildren. He never encouraged them to go into sport. He said, and I quote, "Athletes are idolised as special people when they're really only flesh and blood like everyone else. And kids are pushed to excel in sport. It's actually a business, not a sport. And look at the damage," he said, "done to youngsters who are put under pressure to be the best when most of them simply can't be." He said, "even when one becomes the best, it's a deception. Why? Because it's not lasting, nor really satisfying. Stars are soon replaced and generally forgotten, then disappointment, depression, and physical problems follow." He said, "rather than competing with others to be the best, helping and serving others is what brings true satisfaction." Why am I saying this? Well, we learnt yesterday that the Queensland Rugby League fraternity had been plunged into further mourning with the tragic death of one of its most talented young rugby league players, Grant Geese. Died unexpectedly on Saturday night when he was out with teammates. He was 25. He'd played alongside people like Daly Cherry-Evans and Matt Gillett in 2007-2008. He was the 6th rugby league player to die in the past 2 years in similar circumstances. Since February 2013, rugby league has lost the West Tigers prop, Moasisi Fochuyaya, so I think I've got that correct, the Mackay Cutters Hayden Butler, and 3 from North Queensland Cowboys, Alex Elisala, Regan Grieve and Francis Winterstein. Everyone at the East Tigers Club in Brisbane, including the CEO, the former great international, Des Morris, can't believe it. He said of the young man who died at the weekend, "we can't find a rhyme or a reason for this. We need to give his family a bit of time to get their head around it and go from there. We don't know what happened. The police are doing their investigations. No one knows what happened. I can't understand it. I don't know what would have caused it. Our best wishes are with his family." The young man had a brief stint with the NRL side Melbourne in 2013. Hayden Butler was a similar boy, a brilliant young athlete, destined for great things. Everyone wanted him in their team. In winter he played Aussie rules, on Saturday it was rugby league, and Sunday wall-to-wall athletics. He was such a good runner he was offered a scholarship to a sports college in the US. But he decided his heart was in rugby league, he turned it down. The shelves in his bedroom were filled with gold and silver trophies, cups and medallions, ribbons trailing like leaves from a hanging basket. By the age of 17, he was playing in the SG Ball under-18 competition for the Melbourne Storm. He won a scholarship to Hallam Sports Academy in Melbourne. In 2012, he got a contract for the Storm's under-20 squad. He thought his future was assured. He saw his dream. When he was 14 or 15, he was identified as one of the hot prospects in Melbourne. The Storm recruitment manager regarded Hayden Butler as the best of his group. Then Melbourne Storm terminated his contract in 2013. He was devastated. He came home and told his family they don't want me no more. They say I've got an attitude problem. Suddenly he lost a lot of his goals, and this is what the issue became. They get into the system, as Hayden Butler's confidant at the Burley Bears on the Gold Coast said, when the blows mount, Hayden began to crumble. Said 26-year-old Casey Lyons, they get into the system when they're 15 or 16, then they play with the under-20s, they think they're going to be the top, and then they're thrown out. They end up with nothing. It's hard on them. And so people like Hayden see no other life outside football. He'd been told for years that nothing mattered except his performance, and he sacrificed everything, education, friendships, for the game. Now he saw himself being sacrificed. He didn't have anything else to fall back on. He went to Queensland to play for the Burley Bears. Then he joined the Mackay Cutters. Being dropped from the Storm became his demon. He felt a failure. He didn't think he was good enough. Then he got an injury and it kept him off the field for months. He felt he was letting people down when he couldn't play. He wasn't reaching the standards he set himself. And then just before he went to Mackay with the Cutters, with a chance of playing with the Cowboys, Ray Ertle, one of his best friends, whom he met as a junior at Melbourne Storm, took his life. Ray Ertle was another star in the making when he died. He was an integral member of the Victorian State representative team, and like Hayden, a weakness to a coach. On the night he died, Hayden seemed as happy-go-lucky as ever. And like young Grant Geese, he had a night out with his friends on the Friday night. At 4 a.m, young Geese contacted his fiancée, and the couple discussed him catching a taxi home. He never arrived home. They found his body on Saturday. Now, of course, rugby league's a microcosm of the wider world. Suicide is the leading cause of death for those aged between 15 and 44. In 2013, more than a quarter of the deaths of males in the 15 to 19 and 20 to 24 age groups were due to suicide. While the rate of suicide in rugby league players may be no higher than the national average, their high profile is drawing attention to the welfare of young players, especially those who haven't quite made it to the elite level. They spend their often short playing careers constantly terrified that an injury or a bad game will mean they'll no longer be wanted and they'll be thrown out into a very cold world. Most young players suffer that rejection. Only 20% of those who've played in the under-20s, the national youth competition, make it to the NRL. Yet on the other side of the coin, you've got the same NRL making a fortune. They earned $350 million in revenue last year. What happens to it? We learnt last week they're going to have a new top-secret match official bunker. The plans for video referees to sit in a dark room with no windows and a single door where they'll make live decisions on matches. And this is to take pressure off match officials by placing them in a neutral venue where they can make objective decisions without crowd pressure. I've never heard of such rubbish in my life. I'm glad to hear it's a dark room, the kind of dark room inhabited by many of these young boys where no one is able to save them. We have millions of dollars to spend on a ridiculous top-secret match official bunker and nothing on these kids who then end up taking their lives. Stephen Cobley is a sports psychologist at the University of Sydney. He makes the pretty common sense observation that sports systems should take the responsibility for fostering an environment in which players' performance is ranked more highly than their welfare. Dr. Cobley, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for your time. It's a grim picture, isn't it?
Very tragic, unfortunate events. Yes.
You say we continue to recruit players from an increasingly young pool, and these players don't have the maturity to cope with the pressure.
Yeah, that's right. We seem to be in, at the moment, not just rugby league, but many other sports are in the same sort of approach of, you know, there's lots of commercial interest, lots of interest in the game, the game's growing, and we think that there's good benefits to recruiting players younger and younger and starting to train them in a way that helps them move forward into what we hope will be an elite athlete.
But, of course, they're constantly told you need to specialise and train earlier and earlier in order to make it. The mindset is all about performance, and many of them don't make it to that final destination, do they?
That's right. The odds are actually very small. And perhaps smaller so in other sports like soccer. You're looking at
your point is the intensity of this becoming an elite athlete in a short time is a massive transformation, is it not, from being just a simple 15 or 16 year old schoolboy?
Absolutely right. That's right. You're moving from one complete world into another, and making that step is very difficult. And then many athletes will tell you that that's a step that you don't make just in one phase or one stage. It takes many attempts.
Yeah. I saw a study at Teesside University I was reading last night in Middlesbrough early this year, dubbed Depression Football's Secret, that 54.5% of youngsters whose football careers were cut short suffered clinical levels of psychological distress within weeks of being cut adrift by their clubs. So we pump up these kids' tyres and then cut them. Sorry, you haven't made it. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. Do your best.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because the system only allows for, unfortunately, the next level up, which is the contract stage, or you make it stage, you get the big deal. Or if you're not there, and there isn't kind of a fallback system often. And if for many sports, 18, 19 in team sports is like that cut-off period.
Right.
So you're back out into the big wide world again.
Yeah, where they experience, I think, as you said, a range of psychological problems, not only depression, anxiety, a loss of confidence, and the impairment in everyday functioning. And they tell no one. They tell no one. So they spend a number of years in a club development program. They develop a high athletic identity. Then they're released. No one wants them. And they lose the primary source of their identity.
That's right. And then a lot of the things that might have been on the back burner, or things that you didn't perhaps invest in because you weren't told to, or the rhetoric was you need to do X, Y, Z. And therefore, then you have to be confronted by a lot of other things that are in the... they're outside of the sport, and obviously there's a social world out there that you've not been familiar with for a long time.
Absolutely. You made the point recently that deselection can be the most dangerous point of a young rugby league player's life. You
That's
said
right.
young men who are told they're invincible, don't know how to cope when things go wrong, where we have people who have one entity, one narrative, and you take that away, there's nothing left.
That's right. You can feel very isolating, and you can feel very lost. We also know from actual professional players as well, not just the young, that their levels of distress, anxiety, depression, esteem, alcohol, abuse, other artificial substances, the list of things starts to magnify and increase a lot. And so the risk of psychological and mental illness seems to go up a lot in those deselection or transition times when you're transitioning out of the sport.
Surely an outfit with revenue of $350 million ought to have in place programs to deal with it. And that is not after the event. I mean, I'm talking about saying once a person is, quote-unquote, deselected, to bring them into a program which helps them in that transition.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly support services that the NRL have available. To what extent and how reaching and how far-reaching they are, I'm not aware of.
Well, you can't wait for kids to volunteer themselves to that, because that's admitting a weakness, isn't it?
True, but I know that, for example, last week the Players Association have launched one of their programs called the State of Mind to raise a lot of trying to break through that hidden crisis and stigma of mental illness issues.
One young player recently said, I've been playing football since I was 18, and if it all ends tomorrow, I have nothing to fall back on. There's nothing else I can do. The mates I went to school with are starting out on their careers just when I'm looking at the end of mine. And that young fellow attempted to overdose recently because, quote, suicide seemed my only way out. I mean, sporting authorities are governed, aren't they, by the big quid? These people do seem to be expendable, don't they?
Well, I think it's hard to say. I mean, there's a separate question about what's going on in the professional sport, but I do think, yes, you've got an issue about the fact that people are on the fringes, so the younger players who are vulnerable, and to what extent, I think one of the core questions is, to what extent should we be encroaching perhaps on their younger years and affecting possibly their education? If we're pulling and streaming players into these systems, what are we doing at these younger ages where we're still forming identities, we're doing physical development, still doing psychological development?
Yeah.
It's a very vulnerable time.
Very good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Stephen Cobley, a sports psychologist. I think that great American athlete Henry Carr got it right. He simply said all this sports stardom's a deception. It's not lasting or really satisfying. Stars are soon replaced and generally forgotten. then disappointment, depression, and physical problems follow.